up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Hello and welcome to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tomorrow Greg Pepys on the board. S&P futures were down a little bit this morning. As soon as I get the right page up here, I'll tell you which. There we go. We're down 11 in the S&Ps. Down 67 in the NASDAQ after a huge up day in the NASDAQ yesterday. There doesn't seem to be any limit to where the seven big stocks, especially the ones that were down at Mar-a-Lago, can go. What is Tesla up like 50% since the guy decided to be part of government or something? This is crazy stuff. Anyway, we have Professor Liu.
Good morning. How are you?
How are you, buddy? I'm just looking at the vagaries of the market here. Kind of crazy, but we're going up every day, so... My clients are making money, so I'm not upset about it, Lou. You know what the hell?
Well, let me start with a story that overlaps your specialty in the sports world. The NFL, as you probably heard, opened up its ownership options to private equity, and sales have just gone through for the Dolphins and the Bills, selling up to I think 13% of the team. For I believe it's the Dolphins, but valuation based on these percentages, valuation for the Dolphins set at $8.1 billion and $4.9 billion for the Bills. Mainly, the Bills are lower mainly because they've got some significant debt with this new stadium that they've got. That's like a $500 million or $750 million over budget right now, but. This huge chunk of money pouring into to the NFL owners of these clubs, and giving them almost instant liquidity.
You are very clairvoyant, by the way, because I was going to.
And the Bears still can't build a stadium.
That's right.
The Bears have a stadium.
You know, so let me throw something out here. And in 1993, when I became or was first certified as an NFL agent, the new collective bargaining agreement with the salary cap and a bunch of other issues or factors came into play. And one of the things that one of the NFLPA management people said at the agent meeting down in Indianapolis was that this system is going to do two things. It's going to make the players much wealthier, which it definitely has. It's also going to expose the management of NFL teams, because if they're not smart and they don't have smart people working for them, they're going to blow up under this system. Hello.
Okay. Wait a minute.
I think this investment. Change has the earmarks of the same kind of thing.
Define blow up.
Oh, it means they're going to be terrible.
So what?
Pardon me.
So what?
The
Bears.
Oh, well, the idea was that they would be, if you wanted a winning football team or a successful program, you were going to have to be smart enough to manage the salary cap, and the teams that could manage the salary cap well. we're going to be successful clubs, and the other ones were not, and that was his point.
Well, but I mean,
they don't even have a coach or a place to play.
They have a fine place to play. They have some of the highest ticket prices in football, and they're net in the place. Other than maybe Dallas is as good as anybody's. They just raise the prices. What's the difference?
Do you see UNC hired Bill Belichick?
Yeah, but what I'm saying, Lou, is it
$10 million?
One of your extended pals, another lawyer on the south side who knows a lot of these creatures over around the Bears, he said to me one day, "The difference is you think they give a crap. They make just as much money as they lose. Maybe a little more if they win, right?"
Well, no. I mean, although again, who knows?
Isn't it all about vanity at that level?
Right. I don't pretend to understand what motivates the NFL owners there. I have a pretty good idea what motivates some NFL ownership groups, and but nobody knows what motivates the Bears. I would point to the fact, you know, and you and I've had this discussion. When you have a team that's consistently terrible over an extended period, you know, with very few kind of sort of blips of success, the only constant in that, and they've gone through multiple coaches and multiple players and the whole bit, the only constant is the ownership. And that's what you look to as the basis for the terrible business decisions and the terrible hirings and
every one of them is a first time coach except the guy from Denver. Every one of them is probably one of the lowest paid coaches in the league. And if you're $20 million under the salary cap, how does that not go right in your pocket?
Well, because you have to spend.
Right, but there's a sliding scale in there.
A certain amount.
Right, but there's a sliding scale in there. If you're in the middle between what you have to spend and what the salary cap is, you pocket the rest, correct?
Theoretically, yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
and nobody says how much you have to pay on coaches.
No, coaches are uncapped, so that's where you can spend money. My point is that this change in investment strategy has the potential to expose again the competent business people versus the people who are dabbling, and maybe the McCaskies are just dabbling. You know, they're satisfied. They get the, as you've pointed out, they get the check that rolls in every year, and they look around and say, yeah, that's good enough.
13% of $8 billion is like $1 billion. So
yep.
Is it Stephen Ross?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he just got $1 billion cash from some private equity. They can do whatever, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, they can take, I mean, I think he said.
If the Bears are worth, you know, $6, $7, $8 billion.
That's my next question. Why not make it $50 billion? I mean, where is the tap on it? Everything we talk about on this show, Lou, it's funny. It may sound like it's all very disparate, but it really isn't. It's all the same subject. You have a certain amount of people in this world now that have so much money they don't know what to do with it. The $1 billion from this guy is like you and I going out and buying three beers. It's like the lady from who bought into, what's his name, the Dallas team, Mark Cuban's team. She got, I think, I'm not absolutely positive, that she got a whole bunch of stock from her old man in Las Vegas Sands, and because of the piggy move up on the tax law, which absolutely only helps the rich people. I'm not saying it's bad or not. I'm just saying she didn't have to pay tax on any of that, right? And she just traded dollars for. You think that lady would ever have gone out and worked and made like $2 billion on salary that she actually worked for to put it into a team? That's funny money to her. It's not to any of the rest of the world. You can't even look at those numbers and say they're real. They're real for that class. They're not for us.
That may be the case. I'm just noting that when you have, you know, these kinds of people, these kinds of, you know, investors coming into these operations, eventually, you know, they don't have a voice right now. They don't have a controlling share, but they've definitely got a voice, and so it may well alter how some of these clubs are operating in terms of personnel, in terms of management style. I mean, one of the things that I've noted is the incredible bloat in NFL staffs. And
every time you have too much money, Lou, there's bloat.
That's right. That's right. I mean, I saw that when I was working with a number of startup.coms in the late 90s when revenue started pouring in. But you know, maybe this changes. Maybe
let me ask you something basic. You know,
but
you're leading.
You guys are the investment group.
I know. I'm trying to lead you and maybe Greg a little bit. Okay, let's. What say the place is worth $8 billion? Okay, which Greg just did the math.
Yeah,
it went for $8 billion. Now we're going to enter a time here where there is some, let's say, alternative use of money. We haven't thought like this in 25 years, but. Anybody who puts up $8 billion, one of these days, maybe really soon, we may going to have, given our budget deficit, we may be going to have an interest rate in this country that's past, it's 8% again.
Yep.
Okay. So if we do, the alternative investment of $8 billion is, by my math, $640 million a year that you could plunk in a treasury and get. There isn't a football team in the next 20 years that's going to make $640 million. What is the nature of that investment? If that was your kid saying, "What are you doing?" And what do you think? I'm going to say the Bears probably.
We're investors for the long term over here.
Okay,
Chief. You know,
yeah.
Monopoly is priceless.
Let me. So I'm really. Well, that's the truth. There is a reward to being in the club. I get that part.
Well, no, there's a huge psychic reward.
The psychic reward is, I've got the Bears, and I might be a few years behind the times. I got the Bears $200 million to $220 a year in profit, right? Because they're paying a lease. They're not paying big dough for the place. Now, if they had to pay a $640 million interest check on day one, where does that leave them?
They don't.
I'm saying...
Yeah, they can get investment from the private equity.
You're missing... I have to take Greg one of these days and show him my basic finance book. The person who's buying the team... He either has to borrow the money or he has an implied interest cost, which means he can do something else with it, like maybe earn money on it.
Like you said, it's funny money at that point. Miriam Adelson's got $40 billion.
I understand, but someday the numbers matter, I think. Someday the numbers matter.
Yeah,
you're not going to buy this building
for other people.
Okay, you're not going to buy this building for $20 million, which would mean your interest cost is going to be, $1.4 million a year. If the rents are $800,000, you're not going to do it, I don't think, unless you're an idiot.
Well, let me flip this. Just a couple of other caveats. The NFL rules that allow this kind of investment say you have to hold the investment for 6 years, minimum. I think these people are looking at it as at least a 6 year investment and a return on a 6 year investment. They look at it as, to a certain extent, recession proof. They look at it as a huge psychic value. You know, we're part of the owner of an NFL team, and this is really interesting to me. So the next question, and then we could sort of work all this in, is how is looking at this and this kind of practice affect, say, college football?
You realize what you're doing this morning? These are my first two questions. You just asked them both. I was going to say, private equity, as you obviously know, probably better than me, is also digging around in colleges.
Oh, yeah, big time.
Now, my question is, from a lawyer perspective,
and Tom, the college game is not nearly as well regulated or as businesslike as the NFL.
Well, you mentioned... That 6 years, you know what, Lou? I was involved in some of that with DPMs. They were never going to be able to sell them. I was not involved, but I followed closely. Oh, we can have casinos, but they got to be boats. Well, you know, in 10 years they weren't going to be boats. If one of those guys gets in there and croaks, I got news for you. That thing is going to be able to change. Somebody will sell it early, and they'll get a waiver. Those rules are made to be broken. They're just making people feel good.
I would be surprised, knowing what I know about the NFL ownership, I would be surprised if they waived that requirement any time within the next 30 years.
Okay. Well, so my question, where's your buddy these days, our tax guy? When does the college game, before we get into the equity part, when does the college game blow their tax deduction? I mean, how does, if somebody buys into the Notre Dame team, you know, and all of a sudden that becomes, where Notre Dame essentially kicks the football program off the books, and now is able to sell 40% of it to, you know, Blackstone or somebody. Now, can you pay dividends in a church organization to somebody else? There is no concept of profit. So how do these people think they're going to get their profit out of the place?
That's a good question. I mean, one of the things, it's interesting to watch this, because what I think is happening with colleges is what happened at the service academies 30 years ago, 40 years ago, when it became apparent that, you know, the U.S. government wasn't going to fund, actually more like 60 years ago, when the U.S. government shouldn't be in the sports funding business, the service academy set up a quasi-public entity that was their athletic department, their athletic association, that managed, you know, could engage in signing contracts and things like this without having to deal with government contracting rules. So they were quasi-public in the sense that they answered to a U.S. government entity, but they were private in the way they were managed and ran themselves. And so I think for enterprising colleges, this is going to be the model. They're going to have to step away. Their athletic departments are going to have to step away from the not-for-profit side of the house, because, as you just accurately noted, they're in the profit business, and the more we get into talking about things like private equity investment and direct payments to athletes, the less this looks like a school and the more it looks like an NFL farm team.
When does Notre Dame have to pay, I don't know if they have one, but Illinois does, when do they have to pay Indiana amusement tax on the tickets if it's for profit?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, these are all issues, you know, the can of worms that's going to get opened up when you start treating universities as, you know, profit centers rather than educational institutions. Tom, this is something you and I, again, we've talked about in some detail, and so has Kevin. The need for some kind of overreaching regulatory structure is going to have to occur. And that's one of the reasons why you see that private equity group that we talked about a couple of episodes ago coming into the fore, because that kind of organization introduces the kind of regularity that, if you're an athletic director, you look back and go, thank God the adults are coming back in charge, as opposed to the Wild West, which is what they've got right now.
If you put the two together, You know, it's interesting that if somebody ever was foolish enough to have me as a professor in a business/economics class, my first question to people at a graduate level would be to walk in and say, define profit in today's world. Can you do it? I can't.
Okay.
I mean, what's profit? I mean, the University of Northwestern here in Chicago has a city damn near that does all this research and hospital and all the other crap they're doing over there, parking for $30 a throw. What does the head of the place make? Like $10 million or $20 million or something? You're telling me you can pay a guy $20 million, but it's nonprofit, you don't pay your property taxes? I mean, what are we doing here, Lou?
What are we doing? These are all legitimate concerns, and as we move from the kind of sort of ivory tower view of colleges as these, you know, bastions of intellectual exercise to the more venal view, if I could use that word, of colleges as simply another source of revenue, for the state or you know the private ownership. All of these questions come to the fore.
Yep.
It's cutting across. It's cutting across all kinds of lines.
We have. Let's say people that aren't focused on a lot of this stuff. But it's what if you and I and Stacks and Jacks people could put together some money because of what's his name? Lou, help me with his name. I'm a brain fart. Raswani, is that how the guy who's doing the stuff for Trump?
Oh, Vivek Ramaswamy or whatever his name
yeah.
is.
Yeah, well, you're as bad as I am.
Ramaswamy, come on, guys.
Ramaswamy, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Greg. He's bitching and moaning because hospitals put these research institutions put a 70% overhead rate and the money the government gives them for research, which is sort of absurd. Now what if you and I and the rest of them say, let's get one of these buildings downtown or something, refit it, and let people do medical research in a place. Now, it's going to cost a lot of money, obviously, to do that because you got labs and stuff. What if our overhead rate is 40%, and we actually have some investors, and we pay out some dividends, and yet the people at Northwestern just suck it all up in wages for the higher ups, for the poobahs? Well, isn't that profit? Maybe it is. I don't know. It's not traditional profit, is it? But none of these people have any owners. They have no. There's no. Where's the direction?
Yeah, where's the accountability?
Well,
the
board's getting salary too.
Boards don't usually get too much salary.
And that's the
stock.
That sort of closes the circle a little bit on the argument that
my next question is, if college, say the 40 teams, 50 teams, whatever it ends up being,
70.
Okay, whatever the number is, how much, if I'm putting that kind of money up for the pros, how do you not have it in the back of your feeble brain that these guys are going to become essentially a competitor? They're not just going to be a feeder for your teams. They're going to become a competitor to your league.
Yep.
Greg, were you the guy who sent the thing out on our little drinking groups? The guy who's making $7 million and he's making more than somebody would make the first year as a...
Yeah.
What was that story?
Yeah, so there's a couple stories of college players signing deals for more than NFL... draftees, so
yeah, minimums.
That was yep. one where the quarterback's going to make about $7 million, and then there's another one where a Florida O-line guy had wanted a guaranteed. I think it was $50,000 a month, and what else was it? He was guaranteed to start, and a couple other things, and Florida told him no, so he entered the transfer portal.
This is a mirror of what's already happened in women's sports. Caitlin Clark took a pay cut to go to the WNBA from her NIL revenue at Iowa. I mean, a substantial one.
Well, so what are they going to do in college? Are they going to say if you go to grad school, you can play 6 years? Why not?
So who's the quarterback for Utah?
Yeah, he's still playing from 2017.
Yeah, I mean there was a great thing about comparing him to Trevor Lawrence, who's been
in the NFL for like 4 or 5 years.
Been in the NFL for 4 years, started at the same time this guy did. Been in the NFL for 4 years, and this guy's still playing quarterback for Utah.
And making no, how many, I guess if you do the math, which a lot of people don't, and why I do stuff, I'll ask you two guys. Greg, maybe you've heard me say this. If you go to your conference championship and lose and still make it into the playoffs and make it to the finals, off the top of your head, how many games is that after a 12-game season? All at high level, we are playing really good teams. How many games is that off the top of your head?
Additional,
yeah. So conference championship.
These off the top of your head. Don't work it through.
All right, fine. So I'm going to say 14.
No. It's 5 extra games.
Okay, so 15.
No, 12 plus 5, 17.
Okay. Well, I mean, the Air Force my school only plays 10, so.
Well, most schools play 12.
No. Yeah, okay.
Now, the conference championship is 13. If you lose that, you don't get a bye, okay? So then it's four games to win to go to the championship there. That's one hell of a lot for college kids.
For college kids, absolutely. Well, it's crazy.
How many, even the teams I guess I can name schools in Ohio, say it's in the playoffs, they're losing people to the portal this week.
Yep.
Now, how many, the teams that are going to the playoffs, you might have a little bit, when is that contract going to change, Luke? I have word that somebody, been in Ohio State 2 years, has made, 50, 60, 70 a year, never got into a game, and he's gone. Now, when does Ohio State say, whoever he goes, you got to pay us some money because we recruited him, we paid him $70,000 a year, we fed his ass, and by the way, we coached him. How does that guy leave for free?
Well, I agree. I mean, we talked about this. I mean, what about the guy who says, you know what, I've got a potential NFL contract sitting out there. I'm not going to play in the bowl game or the playoff
right,
game.
Right.
And I my response to that was you have to write. I mean, these are contracts. You have to write into the contract that, oh, dude, you're going to be playing. You're going to be playing for us until the season's over, whenever that is, and that includes any bowl games. And if you don't, then you forfeit all of it.
Now, well, I mean, that's one thing, but the players are going to push back.
The players may push back, and the reality will be, as I've experienced with some of my former charges, good luck getting, a $50,000 a month back from some 21-year-old, who's probably burned through it already.
Well, but I mean, the other point is the season's over at Thanksgiving, roughly, for most schools, correct?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, the portal, if you want to leave and go somewhere else, you have to be accepted and ready to go pretty much by Christmas, because you start the new semester or whatever right after the first of the year, right? So if I want to leave, I got a month to leave. Just because you schedule a game on January 3rd doesn't mean I don't get the move, right?
Again, this is all a matter of contract now.
Well, I'm saying it, but I don't think the contract can essentially negate the Supreme Court decision. Okay, we're going to say we're going to, instead of your for 12 games, if we schedule another games, you got to stick around.
I don't think the Supreme Court decision says anything about that.
Well, so the high school player who's getting the $7 million to go to BYU is basketball. It's not football. How about that?
Well, that's school can make a lot of money in basketball if it goes to the NCAAs and win a few games.
Yeah.
Well, I guess what I'm saying, Louis, you can't if somebody has a right to leave, and then there is a transfer portal, you just can't schedule a game in February and say, okay, now you can't leave. I mean, how do you do that?
That has to get factored into the negotiation. But I don't think there's. As of right now, remember, this is the Wild West. As of right now, I don't think there's anything prohibiting a college club from telling its people, if you're going to take our NIL money, you either pay it back or you stay for all the games.
But that's the point. It's not their money. They're the third party observer. It's Under Armour's money. It's Pete's Pizza's money. It's somebody's money.
Well, whoever the entity is that he signs the contract with. And that term of that contract says you will play those games. And if you don't...
But a learned attorney, just like you, said he's too young to sign a contract. Probably.
And he's over 18.
How do the kids in high school... I mean, how does... Okay, so is 18 the age everywhere?
I believe for the age for binding contracts, yeah.
Right. So, what about
the kids? And you have you're gonna have a real hard time arguing that this was some kind of coercion or contract of adhesion when this kid's very likely got all kinds of advisors sitting there telling him what to do or giving him advice. You know, these would be comparably at these levels with this kind of money. These are going to be comparably situated, or at least in terms of legal sophistication. Parties on each side.
Well, and what's going to stop, you know, let's say the Irish keep doing this, what's going to stop the Irish in Wisconsin not scheduling a game in Soldier Field on a Saturday competing right against with the Bears? I mean, the right now the NFL has essentially, what, 30 teams, 31 teams or something?
32 teams.
32 teams, and the colleges are going to have 40. Maybe are both leagues going to be worth triple 5 years from now?
Well, you know, this is a great question. We talked about this about 10 years ago.
Yeah. This isn't new. Rick Tellender's book is how old now?
Yeah, but we just noted that the NFL, for example, has completely broken down. You know, it used to be the NFL wouldn't schedule games on like Friday nights or Saturdays because they did not want to bump heads with high school or college football.
Right.
They have completely blown through that now, and have absolutely no qualms about scheduling against college games. And the only thing that would stop them, or that prevents them from doing it just wholesale, is the fact that they realize they're going to run up against some college TV contracts that will actually pull, you know, split their viewership, and they don't want that to happen.
Well, they're not on Saturday during the college season, are they?
They are during bowl season. They are.
Well, I'm talking about during the up to Thanksgiving. They're not.
Typically, no. So they've kind of held that line. Although, you know, one of the great things my father noted, because, you know, he came from the CFL, and in the CFL they play games every day of the week. You know, you can have a CFL game on Tuesday, you can have a CFL game on Thursday, you can have a CFL game, you know, on Monday, depending on the schedule. And he noted early on that at some point the NFL was going to figure out that Sunday only was silly, and you know, lo and behold, Monday night game surfaced, and then Thursday night game surfaced, and he made the comment. He said, you know, for all the talk about safety of players and everything else, this all blows it up.
Is Thursday any kind of a real success? I mean, they keep, one year they're on this station, then they're on another station, then they go back to regular TV, then they go back to the other. It seems like I never watch Thursday game. I'm not going to buy another thing for those guys. I mean, I'm sure they don't care about me, but I never watch it.
I think from their perspective, the idea that you have people talking about NFL 7 days a week is the way they want it, and so Thursday gives you that exposure. My point is this: you basically jam in more games, you jam in more exposure, you generate more revenue. Your question is, at some point, does this stop? I mean, you and I were talking 10 years ago about the fact that the concussion protocol could well blow the NFL up, and the concussion issue could blow the NFL up. It's gone, Tom.
They don't care. Nobody cares.
Nobody talks about that anymore.
Well, I remember as a little kid watching Friday night fights every week. And boxing was the biggest thing on TV, way bigger than football. So it was bowling, for God's sake. But, I mean, everything has somewhat of an end. I mean, I'm not saying football is the gambling, but is gambling our future? Here's the thing that we talk about on the show a lot, Lou, even though we don't. The people's judgment. Does the person who come up with $1 billion for, you know, 10% of a team, how much of his judgment is on the people who continually pay for these tickets? And, I mean, is everybody going to gamble their soul away on football every week? I don't know. People maybe used to do that on horses, and we just keep pushing this gambling thing around. But there's some people that gamble and some people don't.
I don't know this, and this is a good, you raise a good question. Is the NFL, how much of the NFL viewership and the advertising revenue is linked to people betting on the games? Either through fantasy or some other direct kind of bets. I don't know. I don't have any idea.
You have to be careful with that, because if you go from the game, I know people that have the fantasy stuff, and maybe Greg is probably too embarrassed to pile in. They never watch
first
a game.
Place.
They never watch a game in their life. They watch the NFL Red Zone or even commercials on that.
Yeah, well, but that still generates revenue. That's people coming back in. I mean, from the league's perspective, that's people coming back in who or coming in who would have had no interest in football whatsoever.
Well, you used to go to the Tripoli Tap on a Sunday, and you know Nick has 5-6 TVs, and every table near a TV and a game, you know, Seattle's playing Denver. Sorry, Lou. Nobody gives a crap about that game normally.
No, right?
And yet there's six guys staring at the thing that they'd bet on that
game. Yeah, it's important. Your fantasy team, definitely.
Well, no, this is long before fantasy. But, I mean, they actually had a bet on that game. The only place they could watch the game was a Tripoli.
Way.
But now it's a different way. But, I mean, I guess, you know, does everything have it's always numbers talking in my feeble brain. If I'm taking a leap that a place makes $200 million a year and I'm buying it for a price that it better make $600 before I make a dime, somehow or another, I got to have a road to 600 profit on this thing, you know. And is it there? I don't know. Maybe it is. It is if we inflate the hell out of the money. That's the truth. I mean, if all of a sudden, did you read you weren't on the show the other day, Lou, when I was reading a thing from where Lenin talked about
John or Vladimir?
Vladimir.
Okay.
Talked about inflation in the capitalism system, and how it's the absolute. They by putting inflation in to try and cure stuff, they totally screw up the difference between the borrower and the lender, because you mess with the value of the stuff that they've done a transaction in. It was pretty brilliant for a guy in 1917, wherever the hell it was, and it's the same thing today. I mean, if we decide not to pour more money in this system, are these teams going to be worth four times as much 10 years from now? I don't see it happening. That's why it happened in the last 10 years. It has nothing to do with football. It has to do with inflation.
I could well be. I mean, they talk about that in the article on this valuation. These guys noting that inflation is driving their value up, and this is a way of, you know, extracting some present term value for it. But it's gonna be really interesting to see how the change in this mindset does this new ownership group, is it going to introduce more financial discipline? Is it? I mean, if you invest in the Bears, let's say that somebody's stupid enough to go out and or the McCaskies are willing to sell to an investment group, at some point, does the psychic value of having that football team start to drive some of your decisions, and you start pressuring your co-investors to start making some changes so you get a better performance? I mean there, at some point that becomes a factor.
But that doesn't cost you anything, Lou.
But it's a value.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And I mean, who? I guarantee you, the owner of the New York Jets, owners of the New York Jets, are not thrilled when the Babylon Bee comes out with a headline that says parents refusing to let their children play football because of the risk of their becoming a New York Jet.
But in terms of dollars and cents, what do you get? You get to host one or two playoff games. Now, it's got to be pretty reasonable scratch. Now, how much do you get versus the league versus any of the other team, I don't know, but it's got to be several million dollars at least. So, would you like your face on TV?
As a spreader, I kind of think of what's the other side. So if you're an owner, maybe it starts to be the marketing and marketing part of your organization, kind of like Red Bull. So you buy these organizations as a counter or as a complement to something else you're doing.
A loser never compliments a winner.
Well, if you're Red Bull, why not buy a sports team? Why not fund a racing team? Why not do all that stuff?
Well, because every transaction has to stand on its own.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, it does.
You can have a entity that's solely devoted to, I don't know, not losing money, but being marketing and paying into, I don't know, if you lose $100 million, that's your budget.
Well, there's always the... What does United Airlines get for the sign being on the? You have no idea. That's PR. People do PR. As a president of the CBOE once told me, Tom, I know I'm wasting half of my money I spend on marketing. I just don't know which half. Marketing is in PR is very tricky, whether it's worth something or not. It has to do with how many touches
right.
people have.
The sports team is not the be-all and end-all and profits. It's not about that. It's about the other stuff around it. It's about the
advertising. Yeah, but that's not, your job. That other people buy advertising. They know more about it than you do.
I doubt Red Bull is, you know, a non-sophisticated player.
That's what I'm saying. They're very sophisticated.
Right. So they bought a sports team.
But I mean,
they bought
Pepsi. Pepsi used to be able to tell you when they used to sponsor Super Bowls, Lou. That's marketing, okay? Because
Pepsi could buy a team. Okay, but it might be cheaper than doing a Super Bowl.
Pepsi. If they spent however much money on a Super Bowl, if their commercials were really good, they could tell by their sales. And this is, Lou, you know this. We've talked about this before. They could tell by their sales in the 4 weeks after Super Bowls.
Yes.
Super Bowl, if they had they would actually get a bulge in sales like the next day. Then it would kind of trickle down every single day, wouldn't it, Lou? The bulge.
And Bud Light could tell how much money they made from that guy they hired as to make the special beer can for the cross dresser or whatever he is.
Well, that might not have been a good idea.
They could tell that too.
But I mean,
my point I was trying to make, and I didn't do a very good job of it, is that these investment groups are going to, I think, start coloring how some of the business decisions in the NFL are made. They're not controlling interest. They're not going to get to be controlling interest. But at some point, they are going to start pounding the table a little bit and say, you know what, we bought into this football team so that we can go to our cocktail parties and tell people we're part of this franchise.
Without a doubt. Mark Cuban.
Yeah, and so we think we ought to make some changes so that we start winning.
The term is psychic income, Will.
Yes.
Well, I mean, so, hey, if you and I bought the Bears...
The market cap of the S&P is somewhere around like $40 or $50 trillion.
Okay,
adding a few more businesses to something like that is not a significant number. The sports teams, they could be worth 10 times the amount they're worth right now. We don't know.
Well, how could they be?
They could be worth 10 times less or ten. I don't know. But
someday somewhere you value something by how much money they're making.
Right, but we don't know what kind of deals they could cut with different, I don't know, sports.
You got to be careful when you do that.
Whatever it is, we have no idea what the future is. I mean, there's a monopoly, and what's it worth? Who knows? But they could be
a monopoly right now,
or they could be
if there's 50 college teams that are pro teams. Now you don't have a monopoly, do you?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, so all of this anyway. This is a really interesting discussion on how this plays out. We're all being purely speculative here, but these are trends. You know, we talk about trends on the show. That's a trend I would be watching closely, you know, in terms of how these clubs are making decisions. And for the college teams, Tom, this is a trend I would be looking for, to see more business mentality being introduced into their operation, because that really is a wide open
playing field. But here's my point on that is, you're not going to get me to disagree with you. All I'm saying is there is a certain... I mean, I went to some bar in Blue Island with my old buddies from high school, and when they watched Notre Dame game, they played West Virginia because it was a day game, right? And they're all saying, you know, I'm still watching them, but this is Rodriguez,
new coach.
This is not the Notre Dame that I loved 25 years ago. This is not students that I know are going there, they're going to class. The Irish sold out the Indiana game at home on a Friday night in December in about a day, okay? Now, if there were three games like that, and if it wasn't Indiana, you still sell them out? That price? What I'm saying, Lou, is if you and I and Greg, if we went out and bought a business, and this is what they did, and Greg's right, you have to look at the future. This is what they did, and you say, well, geez, you know, these guys got this restaurant here, but they don't have a bar. You know, why don't they have a bar? And they're making, you know, $1 million a year. Well, you and I could price it and say, all right, for that price, and if our interest rates is 5, you know, what's the thing worth? It's worth $20 million. Duh. Right now, we may say, you know, if we put a bar in here, that money's going to be $1.4 million, which makes it a really good investment because we already have somewhat of an idea. Okay, but the NFL's been around a long time, and they're growing, and people love them, and the gambling is growing now. and the economy is somewhat growing. But now if you start paying three times, four times what their income is after all these years, now we're talking about paying, you know, instead of $20 million for this restaurant, we're going to pay $60 million because we're sure this bar is going to make us twice as much money as the restaurant. Now all of a sudden, boy, we better be right, right? I mean, it's, I'm saying the more you do that, now one of us, a guy like Greg, he likes the restaurant industry. Maybe he wants to parade around all night and say, this is my place. Maybe that's worth a bunch of dough to him. Well, okay, but to an investor, it sort of isn't. I mean, does the investor really care if Lou Michaels is beaming in the skybox at the Super Bowl, if the place lost money?
I mean, there's some of that, but that's my point. This kind of thought process runs, I think it's going to, at some point, you know, the McCaskies, the family ownership groups that have held on to these clubs for ages, at some point they are going to begin to bring this type of investment in. And I think it runs the risk or the opportunity of fundamentally changing the way we look, or these teams look at their operation. And it'll be leaner, it'll be more focused on the numbers. And this is the kind of discipline that I think college football is looking for. I don't think the NCAA can provide it. And this goes back to the point we made a couple of weeks ago. When you have a private equity group coming in that says, we'll take the top 70 teams and we'll run this thing, we'll put a hard salary cap in place, NIL cap in place, we'll manage all that. Because that's what's coming out of this UCLA case in California.
Okay, Apple is trading 10 times sales right now.
Louis, what you haven't, neither one of you, none of us have touched on, is if you start getting private equity in college, if I was a big contributor, that's the last day I send a check. What am I sending a check to these guys for if they're actually in the profit mode? Why am I donating money to Notre Dame football? If
they got the big endowment throwing off interest. But going back to how it's valued, Apple is trading 10 times sales. So what are the sales of the Bears? I mean, that's probably how they kind of get to some of these numbers. The sales of the Bears is $600 million, or the revenue is $600 million. I mean, it's a big number.
Okay. All right.
Traditionally, you know, what's it worth?
What I'm saying is that the college has got to be real careful. If they blow their current deal, Lou, there's people at Notre Dame that will give them 10 grand a year so they have the right to buy seats. That's going to go away, don't you think?
I think so. I think again, this is just one of those changes that is going to start driving how we traditionally have funded college athletics. We've relied on big donors and, you know, all that money coming in. Well, the private equity guys come in. I think their first thing they're going to say is, yeah, we want control of the money coming into the club with these clubs. We're not going to allow you just to throw, you know, X amount of money at these guys. And oh, by the way, if you're stupid enough to do so, that doesn't get you a seat at the table.
Well, and if you pull Under Armour out of the mix, if they, you know, the money they're giving the schools or Nike, what is Oregon without Nike?
Well, it comes in. It comes. I agree right now, but with a private equity group coming in, they go to Nike and say, okay, you've been donating this much to the program. Now we're going to restructure how that money gets used, and it's going to be more of a quid pro quo kind of arrangement.
And that's when somebody wakes up in the IRS and says that donation is no longer tax deductible, Nike.
That's right. That's right.
There's a lot. Oh. You know, my Notre Dame buddies were going back and forth on this texting yesterday, as they do all day long. And I, at the end of the day, being the cynic that I am, I said, in the words of the cynic, we don't know where we're going, but we're well on our way.
That's right. Yeah, the good news is the bad news is we're lost. The good news is we're making really great time.
Yeah. Hey, that stuff you sent around about the naval ships being rusty and all that stuff. You know what's funny, Lou? That article was talking about all these different processes. One of the guys that I play softball with, a good friend of my brother's, he lives down a block, has a patent and is doing really well at working into the market with one of these powder coatings that supposedly are way better than the spray paint and all the other stuff that goes on girders and highways and all kinds of stuff. It looks like there's a lot of people doing that kind of stuff, huh?
Yeah, this is interesting. I just either blew a fuse or we just lost power again. Sort of interesting.
Did you pay your bill?
I did pay my bill. It's a pop circuit breaker. That article, which for the listenership consists of a bunch of Navy vessels looking like rust buckets, and I mean looking terrible. This is to traditional soldiers who look at stuff like this and look at the message this sends in terms of your overall readiness. This is a real issue, and so I sent that article out because I thought.
Did this
would tie nicely to your rail experience. Well, you have to take care of this capital equipment.
Well, my question is, as you know, I have this mind that once you put the if you go to sea in a ship that's perfectly painted and everything, how long can you be out there before you start getting some rust and stuff? I don't think very long.
No, my understanding is that it's a constant repair and take care of.
Because I don't know if you ever ran with Hal. I mean, Hal was on a... I don't know if you knew that or not. I don't know if you ever talked to him, but Hal, it's amazing to talk to the guy because he was a nuclear... whatever the hell he was. He worked on the reactor of a nuclear cruiser. He was a nuclear guy, but he hated being on submarines, so he was on... They used to have a couple of nuclear cruisers, didn't they?
Yes.
He was on one of those. I don't know if they're still around. I think he said they might be mothballed, but he said just when you're underway... He goes, you never get any sleep. Something has to be painted. Something has to be scrubbed. There's a to-do list every day that's as long as your arm, for God's sake. That every time you get a moment, they're saying, God help you, if you get into port, they got a couple guys over the side scraping rust and stuff. It's an incredible feat to keep stuff looking exactly the way it's supposed to be when you're pounding around in salt water.
Yeah, and the point of this article was that when we send these ships into foreign ports of call and they look like this, we are not sending a message of a powerful, Navy, and we're not. I mean, we're hurting. We can do some things really well, but I'm a firm believer. The old football coach adage: if you take care of the little things, the big things tend to take care of themselves. And this is one of the little things that we're apparently not taking care of.
What do you think of your buddy? 72 years old, getting a 5-year contract to coach North Carolina.
Well, if you had a what is his girlfriend 24? If you had a 24-year-old girlfriend, you'd want to be back in the game.
Well, it's one thing to go around with somebody who might look like your daughter, but your granddaughter, it's got to be bad.
So I refer back to the great line from the book Barbarians at the Gate. Which talks about one of these guys, some 80-year-old guy who was I can't remember his name now, but who was the head of one of the companies that was in this huge corporate fight, and the line was he ended up marrying somebody, I think it was in her 30s, early 30s, and then he became like completely reckless. And the comment in the book was, you get those hormones that have laid dormant for a while. You get those things fired up and running, and everybody's decision-making goes to hell.
Well, Dan, if you can wait one more minute, but you turn me – see, you do this stuff to me, Lou. You turn me on to this because you talked about somebody who was still getting a pension from some war. And, of course, it was a snowy Saturday morning at home. I had nothing better to do, so I dug into who's still getting pensions from the government. And – I think she died, but there's a lady in Ohio that was getting a pension from the Civil War.
Yes, that's correct.
And I think she croaked, but I went into the history of it. What was the deal back then where when you died, your family still got your pension, but there was no inflation on it. She was still getting like $12 a month.
Right, right.
But anyway, yep. her this guy comes. He was in the Confederate Army, but then he ended up in the Union Army somehow. But the dude, at the end of the Civil War, the guy, must have had terrific genes. He went to the 75th anniversary of Gettysburg. He was there. Can you imagine that?
Yes.
But the dude had he was like in his 70s or 80s or something, and he married some lady in her 20s. This is before Viagra. Wasn't he had one kid? He had like four, didn't he? And then the kids lasted forever. Like the kids had kids that last. It was like two generations. It was like 150 years or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, they had very young wives, and that's how it works.
But why was there no inflation on that? When they give everybody else a pension, how come if you're World War One you don't get it? What are they sending a check for $12 for?
They just didn't put it in the law. You know, they didn't expect inflation to be that bad. Much less sophisticated government back then.
Well, in those days, you know, they actually didn't want inflation back then because they wanted to be on the gold standard.
Right.
You know, after the Civil War, of all the people now that pour money into the system, and, you know, Dan can opine on this a second, after the Civil War was one of the most, it's all Milton Friedman stuff, one of the most unique times in the world. We had a massive expansion in this country while prices were going down. Now, I would guess that if you were to say, look at the GDP numbers like we do now, you would say we were in a recession, but we weren't. Because what happened was the South totally screwed their currency up, right? They had enough of an inflation down there. But the North actually was pretty dutiful. We were only up like 8 or 10% a year during wartime, which is not as bad as we were during COVID, right? Which is kind of crazy. But they did put the greenbacks out there. So after the war, to get back on the gold standard and get good standing with the rest of the countries in the world, we essentially dragged the greenbacks back in by buying them with dollars that actually had gold backing or silver certificates. So we actually pulled money out of the system at the same time the country was expanding. You can have expansion with falling prices. One does not equate to the other, even though everybody tells you today that it does. You don't have to be pouring money in the system to get it. And if you pour money in the system, if you're not expanding, you're still not expanding. You're just inflating, which is what we've been doing. But you can actually do it the other way, Lou. And they want to. So I'm not surprised that same group didn't figure that going forward you don't need an inflator on in pensions, because why would you do that? We don't inflate.
Yep.
But now.
Yep. I think that's the thought. I'm sure that was the thought.
But
process.
now we do inflate.
We do a lot.
Have you skied yet?
No, I'm up to my eyeballs in union campaigns and a bunch of other stuff. You guys take care.
You take care too.
I'm gonna go trip my circuit breaker. See ya.
I'm glad at least he has circuit breakers. Didn't say fuses, Greg. What do you think? SP Futures down 15. NASDAQ Futures 104. He said we go right to Dan. That's he's here anyway. Dan, you with
I'm
us?
Here. Yes.
How are you, buddy? Sorry to go a little over there, but Lou's always interesting. Plus, some of that stuff I've loved you to opine on. What do you think?
No, I was just hearing the reference to Belichick, and I, you know, haven't been to Boston, haven't been born and raised in Boston. I always get a chuckle out of Belichick conversations. So,
two things. If you listen to who's the tall black gentleman that used to be the coach of Tampa Bay? It's on. I don't know if he's on. He's not on the. Not on Sunday anymore as much.
Tony Dungy
said when you played against Belichick, you could study all the films you wanted, didn't do you any good, because the next week his game plan would be totally different than he did before, based on you. He said he was kind of one of his kind as a coach. I think the guy from Kansas City might be sort of the same way. But now there's no question the dude has, you know, he's a grumpy dude with a brilliant mind. None of that skill set, in my opinion, right now applies to today's college ball, with getting people out of getting an organization that can identify people in this portal, whether you recruit, don't even want to recruit. It's a whole changing world. I mean, I would have a, you know, if I knew a lot about football, I'd have a real problem. That's not the same skill set. How much do you find these guys? How do we get all these benefactors to pay people so we don't have to? This has nothing to do with football. How does he all of a sudden learn all that in 4 months?
He's a good businessman.
Well, he can. If he does, boy, my hat's off to him. I mean, I'm just saying, what he knows probably is 15% of his new job.
Yep. That's absolutely true.
That's weird, isn't it?
I'll take the other side of this.
It is weird. It turns out to be a lot more about...
Dan, you're breaking off up and down. You're breaking on off and on. You were hearing like every other word, so if you got to move in the room.
We got a rough connection here for this.
How about if we take a couple of second break
this and is then West Palm. That's I don't know if we have any interference.
Tell you what, why don't you try to log back in, and we'll go to about a two-second break. S&P Futures down 13, okay. NASDAQ is 91. We'll be right back.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tomo, Craig Pappas on the board. Real quick break here because we're going to have the PPI in like 20 minutes here. S&P Futures down 12, NASDAQ Futures down 86. Big mover is Adobe down $62 on earnings. That's 11%. Ouch. Those guys have had three huge moves on earnings in the last three earnings things. I'm just thinking two down, one up. But one way or the other, those guys definitely need to fly. We'll save the rest of this for 7:30. Greg, is there anything huge on the traffic, weather, sports front?
Actually, yeah, we do have a, developing bomb cyclone with atmospheric river in the eastern U.S. It says
What the hell is that?
I'll tell you. Rapidly strengthening storm packed with a fire hose of moisture swing across the entire eastern United States through Wednesday night with flooding rainfall, damaging winds, and major travel disruptions. It says it moves northward and torrential rain and powerful winds from the Appalachians to the Atlantic coast. So if you're traveling, make accommodations or don't go.
Well, so, at least no snow though, right?
It doesn't say snow, but it does say the will cause winds towards the middle of the storm where the central pressure is going to go a lot lower, I guess. So that's the bomb part of the bomb cycle.
Do they have somebody working for the National Weather Service now? It was a wordsmith that comes up with all this stuff.
I don't know. I see a lot of rainfall from Norfolk all the way up to Portland.
They can't just say heavy rain, though, huh?
Well, it's like green. Like it. It's not just regular. It's like 2 to 4 inches for like from Norfolk all the way past Boston to Portland.
It's like almost a remnants of a hurricane without a hurricane.
Right. Right. That's so wild, like, that's a little
the perfect storm. Maybe we'll write a book about it.
A little different. Otherwise, yeah. Traffic isn't so bad right now. I think we've got, 22 minutes from Montrose. It's 41 minutes from Lake Cook. I see 28 minutes on the Ike from Wolf. And then the Stevenson is 22 minutes from 294 to the Ryan. So not terrible. Sports you already talked about, yep. Belichick. And we have tonight in the NFL the Rams at the Niners, and then San Francisco is favored by 3.
Winner there might actually take that division.
Yeah.
But they're all the winner. They're barely 500 winners of that division. I mean, they're leaders.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they're not going to get a wild card out of there. But we have Dan Clearer.
We do.
So, Dan, before we get off on other topics, which we always do, some of the clients that you and I, you know, we had clients on somewhat of a regular basis. After this last week of the run-up.
Oh, he left. Oh, no.
Well, he'll be back in a second.
He'll be back.
Craig, putting money in this week. And
I want to go take the other side of the Belichick. I think he'll do great.
He probably will. I'm saying is having a staff to analyze all these people in the portal, are they any good? Okay, Greg Pappas is coming in, he plays guard. Who the hell is Greg Pappas? You're not going to get film snippets.
As soon as he went in there, they got an additional like $10 million in their NIL.
I don't doubt that, but I'm saying, how do you even evaluate these people? It takes you a while to figure out where the money's coming from. The coach is not supposed to disperse it, but I'm sure they sort of are. I'm just saying it is a skill set right now that probably very few people have. I mean, why do you think a lot of these coaches quit a few years ago? They didn't want any part of it.
Yeah, there's going to be a division of labor, and that I think some of the people at the, you know, the underling level are going to be better about going and seeing and figuring out the money and contracts, and then the coaches are still going to be,
how do you know,
I want this player, I want that player.
How do you know how good he is?
Evaluation. Wow. Tapes are better than ever.
But the school, Notre Dame's not going to send you the tapes of a guy that of a guy that's leaving.
No, if I show you, or if I showed someone like Belichick or on his staff video of 10 different guys, they could easily pick out
who's
going to
be the video.
Best. Why wouldn't you have it as...
Unless you recruited the kid from high school, where are you going to get it?
If
it's game
TV.
Film, yeah, if he's playing. Yeah. But what if he's not?
If he's not?
Yeah.
Well, then you're not that interested.
Well, that's... I don't know about that. That's the point.
Yeah, you can go looking, but...
But who's the kid on...
It's not efficient.
The kid from... who's quarterback in Syracuse? Wherever he was, he didn't play. Went in the portal, Syracuse picked him up. Not a kid was the leading passer last year.
That helps.
Yeah. Dan, you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, so before we get off on other crazy stuff, somebody drops you $1 million this week, wants to be in the markets. After his run-up, what do you do? I mean, I was thinking yesterday, maybe a third in T-bills and creeping in with some of the rest. I don't want to throw everybody's last nickel at the market this morning. I don't maybe.
Yeah, it's really interesting week because just a couple of days ago we were hearing that, well, we finally think that the volatility in the Big Seven is leveled off and they've taken a break, and we think from here on in it's, you know, they'll just continue to slide and we don't expect over. And then the very next day, yesterday, of course, they run up again. So I don't think you go anywhere different than where you would have been a month ago. There's a lot of speculation out there right now as to who's going to be the winners and losers. We are sticking to our knitting. We're sticking to what we do best, which is bonds. And it has worked out extremely well because rates have continued to come down. And we expect another rate cut next week by the Fed. We expect a rate cut today, probably before this call is over, by the ECB. So if the direction of interest rates is down, the direction of bond prices is up. So that very simple, if you follow that very simple rule, you'll be making money in bonds. You may not be making the double-digit money that you're making in equities, but I still think a lot of that play is over at this point. So I heard a very convincing woman speaking who really hit a lot of the high points and saying, you know, talking about diversification, and certainly diversification into fixed income, which made a lot of sense. Diversification into the Russell 2000. In other words, this is a period of good liquidity. No reason to be ignoring small companies unless you think they have too much leverage, in which case I wouldn't ignore them even if they had too much leverage. So I would say a cross, you know, like a VTI or an SPY or, if you want to have exposure, we are still in a period of everyone's a winner. You know, you're gonna you know a broad based stroke of the market is going to be a good place to be.
Well, my recommended index was going to be the Russell. I mean, I wanted to run it by you first, but Russell said the same thing yesterday.
Yeah, it could be the Russell. It could be the, you know, it just I think broad exposure it makes the most sense right now, as opposed to trying to fine tune and pick certain stocks. And I'll say that especially after the last 2 weeks of conferences and talking to at least 20 CEOs one-on-one and hearing their stories, they don't see any specific benefits from any of the speculation that we're hearing of what may or may not happen going forward. So there's a pro and a con story about tariffs. There's pros and cons stories about immigration. There are timing stories, more importantly, timing stories of when these are going to take effect, when they're going to be discussed, and then when they're going to actually be implemented. So, and actually, the end result, you know, because sometimes it looks good at the beginning, hey, you know, this might save us a few dollars here or there, if we cut corporate taxes, but then we're going to pay for it on the other side. We're definitely going to pay for it on the other side when it comes to tariffs. So rather than trying to find specific names in here that are going to outperform, we're still in that period that I'm going to call limbo, and I don't like limbo, but that's where we're at right now is limbo.
Well, I don't
until we actually come out of this with a new administration on January 20th. Until we actually, and it won't even be on January 20th, it won't be until months later that we actually see some, you know, real changes that are going to be made that could impact our markets, our financial markets, which to this, up until this point, I think, have had a generally good tone to them, but really no more of a generally good tone than they were earlier in the year.
Well, we're talking about somebody who, you know, he likes to, I'll be nice, he likes to talk. The president, our incoming president, and the last time he was in, he was all talk about health care. It turns out he didn't do anything against
right.
health care. So, in fact, he pulled it off his website like the night he was inaugurated or something. So now we have, you know, a lot of people at PTI, for whatever reason, are in the XLV. They like the health care. They think it's steadier. They didn't want to be in the queues. You know, I guess last year we'd rather been in the queues, but we have a big position in the XLV. And now in the last, since RFK Jr. has been essentially going to get that job, it's dropped some and now it's coming back a little bit. That's one of our, has been one of our steadier performers. Do I stay away from it because of RFK, or it's already down 7%? Is that enough? Is he really going to, I mean, I'd love to see prescription drug prices come flying down. I don't see how one person with, I mean, it's, you're not going to. Republican Congress has been just as stuffed in the ass pocket by these companies as the Democratic side.
Absolutely,
they're not going to be any more willing to make any big changes. As much as I'd like to see big changes, now from an investment side, do I ignore that or do I? I'm telling people, say, what are the ones you've done the best in? And I said a lot of our people have done well in the XLV. Now, do I say, okay, it's down 7%. Now it's back up a little bit. That's enough of a haircut, it's a buy? Or do I say, let's wait a year before we put any in there because this guy's liable to bust up these companies, and I know damn well he can't bust them up. So, I mean, this is not easy, Dan. It's not easy.
Yeah, no, I'd say my answer to that would be sort of what I was getting to. I think in the next few months, you know, until we, you know, I don't know, 6 weeks, at least 6 weeks until we have a new administration, I think we're in limbo. So I think do what you've been doing and do what's been working, because nothing's going to change before then, despite what the rhetoric might be, despite what the speculation might be. So I say sit tight in that. If you've made some money in it, use it as an opportunity to trim maybe 10 or 20% of it, put it back into the overall market. If you've done particularly well in healthcare here, put it back into the overall market. If you like healthcare going forward, stick with the XLV, stick with the broad index, because when you start looking at specific stocks, you're going to get a lot. I think you're going to have, there's a lot more stock-specific risk here. And here's the reason. The reason is change of administration means a change of control, not only in the government, but it often means a change of control with companies. So you may have had a leader that has done quite well in managing a company during the, you know, volatile period of the last decade, let's say, or even the last 4 years, and now we come out of this and suddenly one of the first announcements is one of the major you know, people running the company is no longer with us. So one of the major healthcare companies. So that type of thing can happen, and probably is more likely to happen with the new administration.
One is a guy no longer with us because he got blasted.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I was thinking that as I was saying it, but it could also just be a change of control. It could be, you know, some new there could be some new regulation that's pending that the current management team is not really they're not favorable. They don't view it favorably, so they could step back, and that would all be bad for the investor who's looking to go all out on a particular, you know, a small particular few names. I would say the same thing holds true pretty much across the board with tech and with any other industry that's going to have global exposure, you know, anything AI related, you know, rather than trying to, we don't have enough history to know which companies are going to really be the ones that are you know, the have the best talent in that area, the ones that know how to maneuver it the best or use it, utilize it the best. We just hear a lot of talk. And before jumping in, what I'm seeing, Chief, and I'm not sure if you're seeing this, but I'm seeing a lot of people just jumping in, both feet just jumping in without even knowing what they're jumping into, and doing it without really doing any homework and knowing whether
their homework,
doesn't matter whether
their homework is in Trumpy we trusty. That's their homework.
Yeah, and but it's not really saying much about the management of the company. It's not saying much about what will be there. You know, what's there right now might be decent, you know, in terms of the management team or the corporate culture. It might be decent. It might be, you know, it might be okay. But who's to say that it's going to change once some of the new regulations take place and once some of the people who built these companies and you know, sort of built them to be sort of solid companies with good balance sheets and, you know, a good vision, all of a sudden when those people start leaving, now what do you have? That change of control is what concerns me, and that's why I would go for the broader-based index. You know, again, XLV if you're talking tech, SPY if you're just talking being in stocks, or VTI. I like VTI because you get some international exposure there as well, and a little less of a beta, a little less risky. When you start getting into very small, you know, ETFs that cover a very small space, that's when you start getting, you know, riskier, because you're taking out some, you know, you're becoming very, very stock-specific focused anyways. So the whole purpose of an ETF was to broaden your exposure. So I would say keep exposure broad in here. Areas to be concerned about, obviously, real estate. And again, you know, being somewhat biased, being here in Florida, just hearing all the horrible stories going on in the real estate. Real estate seems to be a continued concern, not just because, and really not even a major reason, being the high, you know, higher 10-year bonds or higher, you know, mortgage rates, but more so the issues of what's going on in local areas with infrastructure, with taxes, with insurance, with overbuilding. You know, so there's a lot of other issues, I think, in that sector that still need to resolve themselves. So that would be one area that I would be cautious on. Otherwise, I think this is a pretty good time to stay well diversified and just enjoy the holidays.
Well, there's just real quick, because I want to get you into some of these numbers that I was going to send you this morning, but somehow I didn't. But I'll wander through them with you. You know, everybody talks about, actually somebody told me, all we have to do is make it through a month and everything will be okay. And I said, okay, how exactly is that going to work? Well, it's because Trump will be in and everything will be fine. You know, I mean, this is what the utterances I was hearing. But I was looking, there's an article here by, there's two articles. Let's do this one and the other one first. There's an article here by Jeff, man, Jeff Cox, regarding the budget deficit. Now, Trump can act like he's absolved from all this, but the fact is he's not, because he was a president for 4 years, for God's sake.
Right.
And he's part of this massive blow up on money spent. Now, he had COVID. I know. I get it. But the fact is, it blew up on his watch. The U.S. budget deficit swelled in November, putting fiscal 2025, which started in October. Already, because the fiscal year ends in September 30th, correct? Putting fiscal 2025 already at a much faster pace than a year ago, when the shortfall topped $1.8 trillion was the year in review. The Treasury Department, for the month, the deficit totaled $366.8 billion, 17% higher than November 2023, and taking the total for the first 2 months of the fiscal year, more than 64% higher than last year. You could come in spouting lowering taxes and stuff. What room does anybody have? I don't care if you're Solomon or Mickey the Mope. You look at these numbers. What policy? What can you do, Dan? I think, you know, events are in the saddle and they're going to drive the president hard. I don't know what. You can't ignore this stuff and say I'd really love to lower taxes. Well, that's cool. How the hell are you going to do that?
And I think that's a good point. And one point that I think also you know, it's sort of irony in that some people are saying, well, we have another, if we can get through the next month, but I'm thinking sort of the opposite. From the point of view of, let's say, a middle level manager of a decent company that's been well run, the manager has done a really good job, you know, has been with the company for 10 years and just, you know, is been a good producer. Now, let's say I'd be more concerned if I was in his shoes about, you know, job retention with the sort of double-edged or single-edged Trump and Musk, you know, ability to pin cut personnel and in many cases good personnel, like somebody who's really been loyal and really, you know, made a difference in the organization and really has the experience level. So my concern would be more in the side of looking at what's going to happen to companies with the change of administration and what's going to happen at the employment level. That seems to be where my biggest concern is, if there is going to be talk of slashing people in order to slash costs, because you're not going to, you know, you can only do so much with raw material costs, and tariffs are going to get in the way of, you know, volume increases. There may be a way around all that, but what it comes down to for many companies is people. And even though we'd like to think that our whole world is automated, it isn't yet. We still need people, and we need experienced people. And I think the right managers, I'm not saying what they're going to do, what the administration will do going forward, but the right managers are going to hold on to those good people through this transition. And if that's the case, I think the market's going to do well, and the companies are going to do well that we invest in.
Dan, why don't we dash a little quicker here, and then we'll, because we got the PPI number coming out, which isn't a big number. We'll cover it for a second, but I want to talk to you a little bit about the CPI stuff. I want to talk to you a little bit about the fact that the Fed is allegedly going to be lowering rates while they're pouring more money into the system, which
right.
should lower the short-term rates, but is causing some inflationary expectations. But last month, the number, one of the gentlemen from CNBC went through it, picked out the high points. Run you through there. Plus, I want to talk a little bit about, I mean, Dan and I, as our commercial says, we are still accepting some new customers. We're pretty selective these days, but still, we're accepting new customers. And I want to talk to you a little bit about just the difference if somebody comes in with a kind of a wildly speculative portfolio. It's one thing to cut a lot of the risk out of it, maybe in such a way where you don't even really you know, cause too much harm on the income side. It might cause a little bit, but maybe you protect it and those other kinds of things. That's relatively easy, Dan, because you're pulling wealth kind of out of harm's way, you know, in which you and I are both we're really good at. It's a little different, a little more challenging if somebody just gives you cash, because the cash is totally out of harm's way, right? And you're essentially, no matter what you do, you or I, to varying degrees, you're putting some into harm's way, you know, in profit's way too, hopefully. But it's also,
sure.
but it's both. I mean, it's not just one or the other. I mean, and how it's to me, I always seem like I'm way more careful investing a cash portfolio. The other stuff, I know I help people. Okay, God, you don't have any protection in this thing. I'll give you some. You know, and I can do that in my sleep. The other way is a little more difficult, I think. I mean, even you, if somebody comes to you with a batch of treasuries and you find two or three of the best companies you've ever seen, you're still a little reluctant to say, well, you know, you got to tell the person, well, it's a little more risky than treasuries. I mean, I think it's fine, but, you know, I mean, 99% of the time or whatever, some number. But it's a little different, right? One you're kind of pushing somebody into risk, and one you're pulling somebody out. I just kind of want your thoughts on that. After SP futures down 13, NASDAQ futures down 104. Looks like PPI is 0.2%. Ex food and energy. We'll get the full numbers when we come back.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right
now. Lord won't fake Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamar. Greg Pappas on the board. SP futures are down 14. NASDAQ futures down 105. This is 2 months in a row. Mr. Dan, wholesale prices rose 0.4% in November, more than expected. We had a hot number last month, and that's usually a precursor of CPI going forward. So the idea that the Fed is whipped this inflation, even by their count, is be careful with that. Be real careful with that. Right now, like I said, we have the individual stocks, like I said, other than Adobe, down $65 now. Ouch, 12%. I don't see a whole hell of a lot moving in the Dow. We got Boeing up 214. That's kind of about it. Salesforce down 275. United Health down 2. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX. I've got so much stuff up here in this thing. So DAX is up 19.1%. FTSE up 4. Call that flat. CAC around up 3. Call that flat. So we're not learning anything from Europe. Over in Asia, these guys have been, you know, crazy for the last month. We've got the Nikkei up 476, 1.21. 39,849 as it's trying to get to 40,000. Hang Seng up 242, 1.2% over 20,000. 20,397. Shanghai up 29.9%. China is again alleging they're going to put more stimulus in their system. Where they're finding the money, I don't know, but that's their announcement. Yesterday we had a big rally after two down days, but we had a good rally yesterday. I have so much up here, Greg, that the my thing is gagging just to hear. Why don't you do a traffic, weather, sports, well, and then I'll catch up.
All right. Morning, everyone. 7:34 here in Chicago. It's 5 degrees right now. Feels like negative 2, though. Breezy cold today. Probably a high of 20. Phoenix, it's about 50 degrees right now. High of 66.
That sounds better.
Plenty of sun. Could be chilly tonight. Traffic has gotten significantly worse. Bad news. Inbound Kennedy from Montrose is 52 minutes. Edens from Lake Cook, 66 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 41 minutes. Inbound Ryan from 95th is 35 minutes. And the Stevenson from 294 to the Ryan is 38 minutes. Like we said earlier, Rams at Niners tonight. And San Francisco is favored by 3. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
Oh, yeah. Bitcoin up down 310, but still 101,000. We've got gold, down $20, but $27.35 at a big rally yesterday. Can't seem to ever go 2 days in a row. Silver down 20 cents, $32.76. And we've got oil unchanged at $70.27. Dan, so lots of questions. Let's do the PPI or the PPI 0.4%. What do you make of that?
As we talked before, I think, knowing where these numbers come from and how these numbers are compilated is still obviously a concern. It varies. It seems to vary the basket of goods, if you will. It seems to vary from week to week. We have this is supposed to be personal consumption. We're seeing some areas of, you know, where there may be some increase, and then we're still, going to the grocery store, for example, and seeing prices very high, going to your local restaurant or diner or a place that you eat, and not really seeing a whole lot of concession in prices there either. Maybe not seeing as much of an increase in wages, depending on what field you're in. Having a sort of generic talk with a number of companies and then hearing a little bit more about, places like Walmart and other big box stores trying to automate more of the systems to eliminate or downsize staff. I would say I have a lot of concerns in here. You know, some are inflationary. I do think, having talked to the steel companies and some of the companies that are going to rely more on imported goods or imported raw materials, there's still question marks there. So I wouldn't put too much faith in the numbers. Again, I think they're a little bit backward looking, in the sense that this is where the period that we've been through, which has not been a bad period. But the period we're coming into, I think I would be either on the sidelines altogether or just playing defense in here going forward. We had talked about creating that portfolio that, you know, we are used to getting a blank slate or cash. And, you know, as part of that portfolio, having some exposure to VTI, which is Vanguard Total Stock Index, SPY, which would be the index that most represents the S&P 500. Also having, if you don't want to buy the individual T-bills, you could buy just the ticker symbol BILL, or that's BILL with one L, B-I-L, or T-bill, T-B-I-L, or even S-gov, S-G-O-V. So just with those five names, you're going to have some protection from this anticipated period of confusion, I think, in terms of how this news is going to get, how we're going to hear, what we're going to hear in the news, how the news is going to get highlighted, which company is going to perform well. Remember, fourth quarter of this year, those numbers won't come out until January. So I think, although there's been talk that in general this year has been a slow year for retail, I think the fourth quarter is going to be much stronger. If you tried to drive by a shopping mall or even tried to buy anything online or, frankly, tried to buy plane tickets, you can see that, you know, prices are still holding up there, and if anything, maybe going up a little. So I'm not sure I'm ready to, you know, say that the Fed has won here with their soft landing. I think we still have a ways to go, and I think this is just a little blip in the data going forward.
I think the blip's the other way. I think they're starting to put 5.1% money supply growth. I think our real growth is about 1.5. I think our inflation is going to be 3.5 or 4 in a nanosecond.
Yeah, I mean, I'm agreeing with you on the final product. I mean, on the end result, I'm agreeing that we're going to see higher inflation at the end. I think this is just a period of, it's almost like taking a breath, and now all of a sudden all this other stuff comes at us, like trying to replace workers at lower wages. That's not going to happen. There's absolutely no way that's going to happen.
Well, I want to give you a quick review here of the numbers, and again, this is from, who wrote this article? Somebody did a nice job here. Greg Iacursi. God, everybody's got this kind of names that I have trouble with. So this is year over year. Now, and I'm gonna tell you what you should not do, Dan, after I'm done with this. Motor vehicle insurance over the year of 12.7%, which I think we all know that.
Yep. Sounds about right.
Pet services up 12.1%. If anybody's had to take a dog to the vet, I mean, good luck. College textbooks up 11.6. I have no idea why. I mean, is paper up that much? I mean, what are we talking about here? Care of invalids and elderly, 10%. Motor vehicle repair up 7.8%. So my advice to you, my buddy Mr. Janitas, don't own a car, don't have a dog, don't send anybody to college, and don't get old.
doing pretty good there.
so there you go.
I actually downsized my car. I actually thought it was the time to start, you know, to start thinking about moving from a nice Mercedes to a RAV4 hybrid, and you know, just to kind of clicked a lot of boxes, especially needing the extra space in the SUV. But that description that you just gave, I mean that seems pretty much in line with what we'd expect. I mean, those are the expenses people are concerned about. When it comes to the medical side, I would say it's more than just the elderly. It seems like it's pretty much everyone I know these days
that has
some sort of an injury, from whether it be from working out or from playing pickleball, which is a big thing in Florida. you know, the amount of injuries that my chiropractor is, they've kept my chiropractor in business. But I guess the point is just there's I wouldn't necessarily call them unexpected expenses, but much higher than expected expenses. You know, you're saying, oh yeah, my insurance will cover that, of course, and then realizing that no, they only cover a certain percentage. So those are the type of expenses that are going to become bigger challenges next year. I don't think those challenges are going away. And I think the same when we're talking about, you know, costs of you know, the vet costs, for example. I don't know, eggs were quite expensive the other day in the grocery store.
Yeah, they're way back up. That's kind of a bird flu thing, though, right?
Right. But I guess the point is that some of these things seem like they're sticky and they're going to continue into the future, and others are going to come and go. I don't think we have found the right balance of automation with productivity yet to have eliminated the proper number of people, talent doing the work, and replaced it with the proper level of talent and vision. So I that is going to still be, to me, a trigger for inflation. There's still going to be, because I think what we're going to see is, yeah, okay, all of a sudden we've moved over, and by the way, we don't need any more operators in this on this factory plant floor, and then suddenly the floor is not running at all because there's a glitch, and the person who was supposed to fix it was an automated, you know, he was automated as well, or she was automated as well.
He was automated. Well, yeah, right. Dan, as somebody who, you know, obviously nobody has, fortunately or unfortunately, the same background as me, where I was actually studying in college at a graduate level, all the inflation stuff while it was happening the first time. And it boggles my mind, maybe because I was locked in. You know, I'm sure if I was somebody who went to welding school, probably doesn't understand how somebody else can't weld, right? Which I'd have a problem with. I couldn't weld anything. But the confusion, even today, among people who are, you know, this guy Jeff Cox, the article I was talking about earlier, did such a nice job, and he also has an article that he wrote that I'm sitting there going, did the guy ever go to, you take economics 101? He's talking about how the reason for the higher home prices is we have a shortage of homes. Okay, and I don't know how many people have been listening to the show for years. I'm not sure how many people I've ever gotten through to, Dan, that you can talk about eloquently about egg prices going up, about motor vehicle insurance going up, because a lot of that has to do with the price of repairing new cars. I'm not even blaming that on the insurance companies. But the fact is, prices in any kind of a free economy go up and down all the time.
Right.
That's if all of a sudden, you know, 100 chickens die off and there's a little bit less, there's a few eggs less, the price of eggs is going to go up that week. And all of a sudden somebody, 200 chickens are born, in any free, healthy economy, individual prices fluctuate constantly. You know, maybe not, you know, not a whole lot sometimes, but they fluctuate constantly. That is a totally different story than a general inflation level. A general inflation level is always a monetary phenomenon. Always. It never isn't. And yet, this guy, he writes this article, and I don't want to pick on it personally, though I'm already doing that. He's talking about how if we're 2 million houses short, and that's why the price of housing and rentals and stuff is too high. Okay, now, on its face value, what do you think of that? Sort of makes sense, doesn't it?
It does. It makes sense to a certain degree, but I think some of it's been geographic with people relocating, you know, especially from the Northeast, say, to places like Florida in the South. I will say, you know, to the other side of the argument is there's been a lot of building in Florida. So to keep up with the demand, there's been building, and there's also been this thing which is not widely discussed called affordable housing, which are much smaller units being sold at lower prices. So there's been a definite plan to build housing for that's affordable, that may be smaller, may not have as much room or as many amenities, but makes it affordable for people who are workers at Walmart or workers who are, you know, near the lower end of the pay spectrum to be able to have a house. So that is happening. I don't know how, whether it's happening quick enough. I don't know how well those places are selling, but I do know what I've heard, at least from a handful of those apartment buildings that have gone up in South Florida, that they've sold very quickly. They've filled up very quickly. So yes, I would agree with his conclusion that, you know, there's not enough houses. But then I think it's also, it gets complicated because then you get the step-up buyers. You get the people that are at the stage in life now where they want to have homes and families, and they kind of go from the apartment living to the, you know, let's have a house with the yard. And there may be fewer of those as well. So then there's another whole dynamic there. But from what I, at least from what I gather, that is a work in progress. That is something that you can actually see progress. You can see development in that area. The areas that I'd be more concerned about that I see less development would be things like health insurance costs, property insurance costs, any type of insurance, auto insurance costs. I don't necessarily see, I haven't seen any type of offerings, if you will, or alternatives, if you will, that make it, other than self-insurance, that make it more affordable. So I think there's sort of the two parts of it. There's the part of accepting where we're at, and there's the part of doing something about it.
Well, there's always an assumption, and one of the things that, well, they were always very rigorous at the University of Chicago, if you make an assumption, you better put it in your paper. Don't just have it hanging in a room like, you know, you know, like a stink bomb. So the assumption in the article is that houses are trading for $350, say. The assumption is we can build houses for less than $350. I think that assumption is useless. There's a couple of kinds of inflation as it equates to an individual. There's Dan Janitas and Tom Howe going to the store and saying, eggs are up 50 cents. Gas is up or down 20 cents. There's something we're there all the time that we assume. We have no idea, nor do we have the time of the day to go in that evening before we grab I'm not a big scotch guy, but before we grab our scotch and say, I'm just going to piss myself off a little more if the furnace went out. Let me look at the price of furnaces versus 3 years ago. Oops, looks to me like they're up 40%.
Right.
What am I going to do? Go hit the kids or the dog or something? I mean, there's stuff that is up that you don't even know about till you actually have the sprained ankle and pickleball and get later. Well, why would you even know that those prices are up? Why would you know a roof price is up unless all of a sudden your roof starts leaking? I think that's what's nailing people now. I mean, I was talking to a guy going, he had a drain that had to be plugged. The plumber wanted 400 hours just to come in the front door. You know, that type of thing. I mean, why would you even know until the drain plugs up?
Right. And I think that's an excellent point. When people are doing their budget, when they're thinking about retiring, that maintenance cost, if you will, or the 6 months of emergency spending is going to be a larger amount now. And, you know, you can't still go by those numbers that you used 3 or 4 or 5 years ago. And you're right, it isn't like that information is readily available unless you're in a situation where you might have, you know, you're not reading articles on that every day. That's usually your neighbor down the street that had that issue, and now it's your turn. You know, that's usually how you hear about it, is word of mouth.
But I would say, Dan, that there's, you know, I'm not denigrating a state, but you could probably go in some smaller towns in Louisiana, Alabama, or someplace, and you can buy a certainly livable house, you know, probably hasn't been updated in a long time. I'm going to say 125.
Probably.
130, 135, 140. You and I couldn't replace that thing for that.
Right.
And plasterboard costs as much in a crummy house as it does in a nice house, right?
Right.
Same way for a furnace. I mean, I don't think all the places that Audrey sells out in Orland, and I know her place, Audrey's got a real nice ranch-style home in Orland. People love ranches as they get older, for sure. I have no idea what the thing's worth. I'll take a stab. $450. I don't know. I mean, I have no idea. That's why I'm not in real estate. I don't think you and I could put that thing up for 450. Not a chance. So just building more houses doesn't necessarily drop the price.
Right.
If the replacement value, well, she showed me one of them, Dan. I think it was listed for $1.2 million in one of the really nice gated communities out there. It was built by a builder. The thing was really nice. I mean, everything, you know, the family room was perfect. The woodwork was perfect. I mean, they had a bar downstairs. It was a real nice. I'm sitting there going, oh, not my business. I tell you what, I don't have the $1.2 million to plunk down on this place. But I'll tell you what, I couldn't duplicate it for less than $1.7 million. Not even close.
Right.
Maybe two.
Yeah. That's a good point. That's a point. It's the replacement cost. And that's what would be the issue if it was an insurance issue, for example. But those are the, you know, that I've seen, unfortunately, with some of my clients, certainly with some of my friends who have, you know, probably didn't budget enough when they were deciding to retire. In some cases, they have gotten, you know, in retirement, they've decided, hey, I miss work. I miss being around people. I miss, you know, doing something and have, you know, producing something or using my mind. And so they've gone back to work and they have taken on jobs that at least supplement some of that lost income or some of that income that they need now to pay those higher expenses. So it's worked out well for those people where it's a win-win. But for some others who don't have, you know, who have health constraints, it hasn't worked out as well. And I think just as we need a, you know, we always talk about having a personal finance class in grade school so that, you know, kids can learn how to balance a checkbook. I think we need the same thing as we approach retirement. We, you know, and that's partly what we do, but I think it has to be something that's a little more formalized where people need to know, here's your worst case scenario and here's what you need to, how much money you need to allot for. And in so many cases recently, I've seen people who are really living too close to the edge to be fully retired and you know, now facing some of these challenges.
Yeah, well, a real lot of people need a little something after. I mean, Nancy was on Monday talking about, I mean, really nobody, well, none of our group, even though most of us are, you know, nose is pretty close to the ground. She, you know, she does actual, goes through for people's mortgages, you know, what they're actually doing. And she was saying that if most people, if they're buying a house, both of members of the marital group are all in working to be able to afford the place. And anything extra, somebody's getting a part-time job there. It's like 2.5 jobs. I mean, she goes, the amount of you know, people doing tax returns or doing something on the side or, you know, maybe doing a little remodeling if it's the guy or doing whatever the lady can do. You know, it could be a lot of stuff. Any like if the kid's getting any of these travel squads or anything, how much money that is, that's not in the budget. They have to go out and make more money doing that. And, I mean, I think everybody's right at the, it's so easy to say that young people are too friggin' lazy to, if there's anything wrong with a house when they buy in, if it's not move-in condition, they just don't want to do the work. I think that's, you know, even though I like to tell that to younger people, I don't think it's true, Dan.
I don't think it's true. I think there's a lot of very motivated younger people who really want to be independent and on their own and all that, and I think it's just, in some ways, it seems like the challenge is just too far. It's not reachable. It's not, you know, they can't, you know, they don't see the plan to get there without having to pay the price to, you know, and then at some point it doesn't become, it's like any decision you make on a purchase, whether you're buying a stock or whether you're buying a house, you're, you know, at some point is it too expensive? But then there is, Chief, also that point where, and it's especially true of real estate, that if it's your primary residence, for a lot of people, when it's time, it's time. And you know you might be buying near the top of the market. And maybe if you're lucky, you can do some kind of a lease, buy, you know, mortgage with the option of lease or lease with the option to buy. But in most cases, you're going to be faced with those decisions at a time that you didn't want to. I know I was faced at that time with my first purchase. And I know from an investment point of view, it wasn't the best time to be buying in Boston in the mid to late 80s. But that was a lesson that's never been.
Well, if you're married,
that's never been made since.
If you're married, it's not the first little one. Maybe you can make do in the apartment, but the second little one, you better have some room. You know, generally,
yeah.
Unless you're in New York, where people are used to living like that. But you know, your timing is there, and you know the disparity between median income and median house prices right now is way worse than it was in 2007. It's way worse. And it's a scary. It's a scary number, Dan. I saw it in 2007, and I did a piece on 85% of the population can't afford the median house. And now I think it's worse, and I think the gap. When I saw that in 2007, I looked at it and I go, this doesn't look so good. Something weird's going to happen, and it did. But now it's been like this for a while, and nothing weird has happened. I don't know if we're just better at disguising it, or we're better at doing something. I don't know, but
no, or frankly, we've gotten used to it, which I think is more of what it is. There was a similar discussion yesterday that I heard on airplane prices, and they're talking about it because of the holidays, you know, people wanting to travel, and people were saying, you know, trying to get a last minute deal. Absolutely forget it. I mean, they just don't exist.
No.
I mean, years ago, you could always get a last minute deal on one of the, you know, the no fringe airlines that would, you know, there'd always be a ticket or a seat or a way to go. Maybe you have to take an extra stop. And they're all full now. And the good news for the airlines, and they've actually, I think it was yesterday or the day before, Alaska Airlines had a really nice bump up in their stock price. But the good news for the airlines is that they're being better managed. They're not having to, you know, provide these, you know, discounted fees. They can provide almost the same fees that the big three are providing, and certainly not the service or the amenities. But there's no leeway anymore to price discount, and from the point of view of a customer, you don't have that. And it's the same thing as you're mentioning with housing. It's exact same story. There's not like a, you know, hey, if you go around that neighborhood that might be on the verge of a not so great neighborhood, you could still get a 2-bedroom, you know, that's still walkable to the L or whatever. You know, that just doesn't exist, and it may have existed even just a few years ago. So that's the period we're in, and you've got to be willing to pay up if you want, you know, whether it be the service, the item, the house, the
one of the gentlemen I hang with is an attorney, does some house closings, you know, and obviously Audrey can tell you this too because she does more house closings, but the people say they want the place, and then they'll do the inspection. Now the inspection now is a reason to adjust the price. It's a reason to jaw bone the owner down less, and you can say, well, okay, that's a crappy thing to do. You looked at it, you know. I've read some of these inspections. I mean, it's weird. I mean, obviously, if it's, you know, radon, or if the roof is a problem, or something in the electric in the roof, you're not going to see that walking through there. So I get that part, but now guys are to the point where we think the bathroom needs to be repainted. Well, that's something maybe you should have seen when you walked through the place. But, you know, that's just me being a grumpy old dude. But you look at it and you say, this is an untoward way to negotiate on the one hand. Or you can say, these people are paying up with every nickel they have. They don't have enough money to paint the bathroom. There's nothing left.
Right.
They're not being bleeps. They're just they're just telling you what they can afford.
Absolutely, yeah, what they paid and what they had the money to do. It's that's exactly what it is.
You know,
and I think it's that reality that we're in right now that's also going to kind of gives us some indication or some signs as to what we're going to see in 2025, which I think is going to be more inflation.
I think we're going to see more inflation, and I think rise in wages will not meet it yet again.
Yeah. Agreed.
Hey, so what's up? We'll be on both the day after Christmas and day after New Year's, so we don't miss a day. The Wednesday people will miss a day for 2 weeks. Where are you going for Christmas? You hanging in Florida?
I'm hanging in Florida. I'll be here in Florida next week as well, which is the 19th. Yeah.
Boy, our buddy Kenny, Florida, New York, San Francisco, he's making Marco Polo look like a local boy, for God's sake.
I know. Yeah, I've reached out to him a couple times, but I'm sure we'll connect there.
Hey, good for him. And you guys, you should grab lunch. If I was close to either one of you guys, we'd be grabbing something once in a while because good people. Thanks, Dan. Good stuff as usual. By the way, anybody wants to make a change in their investments, Dan and I are willing to help. So let us know.
Absolutely.
I don't know where you get two guys of this magnitude in one spot. But anyway, so we're here. SP Futures down 14. NASDAQ Futures down 112. Again, PPI a little hot. European Central Bank lowered the rate 0.25%, fourth time this year. So we'll see if our guys follow through. We'll be back tomorrow with Stocks and Jocks.
Have a good one.
That's all, folks.